Welcome to the GOG Cast, brought to you by XSplit Broadcaster. Simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
Another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah, and I am your host for the show. We're on episode number 130, and it's a fun one again this week. Topic of the show, we're getting a little musical up in here. We've got the composer of Cuphead, Christoph Medegen, who is a lovely gentleman and has made some pretty amazing jazz and big band inspired music for this awesome game that's releasing on the Xbox. So, before we get into that, I want, of course, introduce you to the panel of lovely folks that I have around the digital table. Catherine, how are ya?
I'm good. I'm happy that it's finally fall weather that we're getting. I feel alive again.
Oh, 15 degrees. Everything is dead outside, so I can feel alive again. It's fantastic.
Yes!
It's gonna die. Everything's gonna die soon. It's so amazing.
Simon, how are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. 15 degrees outside. I had soup for dinner. That's just fucking fantastic.
I had soup 15. In the middle of summer. I didn't care. I had soup in the heat wave the other day. Chicken noodle soup.
No, I try not to. I love, like, in the winter, like, almost every meal is soup. So in the summer, I'm trying to kind of, like, vary. So I have, like, grilled cheese instead. But, no, the soup is my jam. It's so good.
Speaking of grilled cheese, one day in our Discord channel, somebody shared rolled grilled cheese, and now I want to make grilled cheese.
I have to try it.
I know. So yeah, if you want to continue talking about video games and the food cravings that we have, discord.me/girlsongames. Before we get into everything that is the normal show, of course, want to remind you, if you really like what we are talking about, you can go subscribe to this show on iTunes, Google Play, and of course, Podbean, where we host it. But yeah, it's time to talk video games and what we're all playing. Catherine, what games you be gaming?
Mostly just Overwatch right now. Really, really busy. Can't really game at home, so I'm just doing my Overwatch at lunch and my Candy Crush on the Metro. But I'm getting ready to play some Forza Motorsport 7, which is coming out pretty soon. It'll be out by the time this episode is out.
I'm playing 5 that's free on Xbox. It's pretty fun. It's cool. I like it.
I played 5 when it came out. It was really good. I'm personally more a fan of Horizon than of the classic Forzas.
Horizon is like the arcadey one, right?
It's the arcadey one where you're on a map and
missions and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, and I like to do tricks and things like that, but you can't do that in the regular Forza. You gotta drive good. And I think you've seen by my drive avatar.
Oh god.
I think you've seen by my drive avatar that I'm a bit of a bit of a cowboy there.
Run into thingies. So are you saying that Forza Horizon is a car PG?
Oh!
I can't. I seriously doubt I'm the first person to think
that
of this.
That just happened.
I'm gonna trademark that. I'm probably not the first person to think of that, but anyways, a car PG.
Try and trademark it anyway.
Yeah, probably.
Simon, what are you playing?
I've been playing Shoot the Lads 2 in space. That's a little shout out to the Yahtzee review of Destiny 2 there. I think I'm at 50 hours in the last week. I don't know. I've been really consumed by Destiny 2 and now like the factions came out.
Yeah.
And so I've been Future Walk Alt represent, and I've been doing a lot of that. And, like, I level the Titan, which I find out I liked better than Hunter. So, like, whenever it comes out on PC, I'll be set. I'll know what I'll be playing. I know which items I'm going to take when I'm doing the missions. I know what I'm going to do when I hit max level. So, I'm, like, I'm really set. Whenever it comes out on PC, I'll be done. So, that's kind of...
What's the countdown now?
October 24th. So, 5 weeks?
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
Took a week off because, you know... video games.
Exactly.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to more, even more Destiny 2 on different platforms. In unlimited FPS and 105 FOV. I'm so excited to PvP and do raids and do strikes and stuff in full glory 1080p, HD, all the FPS and stuff. So
You know how they say with guitarists and they have like a bass melt? You mm-hmm. know, when someone plays an amazing thing. I can see you when you're playing that game in max settings, face melt.
Hey, look, it's... And surprisingly, like, when I play the beta, you don't need an insane computer machine to play it. Like, I have a, you know, decent computer, but it's 4 or 5 years old already. And I was getting steady 100, 110, 90 FPS, like, at pretty much max settings, which is very surprising. So, Bungie, if it's any indication of how they're going to handle the PC port, I'm very, very excited to see that Bungie are working hard on making it work properly, so... And it's on Battle.net, so that's even better, because all my friends are on Battle.net, so that's fantastic.
Perfect.
Next best thing to Steam.
So I've been taking a little time playing a fighting game. I'm playing Pokken Tournament DX. Continued Ooh. On with that. And you know what? It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It has all the cute Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, it gets really repetitive.
Okay.
It's a fighting game, which...
How did, like, does you always fight the same person?
Well,
or
I mean,
story,
I'm,
or?
There's a story there okay. with, like, gyms and the same kind of thing, oh, but you fight your cool. way through in battles just like you would in any other fighting game, but, like, you mm-hmm. know, you have to get to a certain level, I think it's level 6 or level 8, in a grouping before you can move into a tournament, and then it's, like, 3 matches. Mm. It's, like, you know, just like you would a soccer tournament or something like that, right? Anyways... So I just played kind of casually, like I was learning all the different moves. I wasn't learning anything super special, but like mm-hmm. I played 63 matches and did not die at all, except for there's 2 forced Mewtwo matches where I think the point is you get annihilated. There's wow. just no, like I think they forced like that's part of the story.
Okay.
63 matches, did not die. And I kept doing this borderline the same thing. Like I got really good at certain moves and understanding certain aspects of the game, but nothing super fancy, no high-end big crazy moves, but like 63 matches and not dying, and I'm not a person to play a fighter game. Mm-hmm. Then when I finally yeah. got to, so I went through 2 stages, I guess you could say, 2 levels, went to the 3rd level, and the learning curve and the skill level curve like skyrocketed, and I was annihilated instantly in my first wow. match, and I'm like sitting there, I'm like, okay, so I've already played 63 matches. Do I really want to sit here and do the same thing again?
Yeah. I feel, well, are you playing in like medium difficulty or whatever? Because I
think
there's probably a
difficulty. I didn't change
any
difficulty. Hmm. I didn't touch anything. And
is there an option for it?
I didn't look for it. But then I went to, so like there's that story, then there's like other stuff like play against people on the internet, play people on LAN, play people right there. I think you can use 2 controller. I'm trying to remember now. I don't remember. But then the other option is like go in and customize your character that you unlocked, and it's just like boring customizations. Like, okay, I think it's a good way to get someone into a fighter because you have Pokemon. And, you know, we relate to them. Plus, it's gorgeous seeing them in 3D. Like, I want a 3D
it's
Pokemon
coming.
Game.
It's
we
coming.
Hope. We hope. But, so, like,
oh,
that
coming.
Is, like, like I love it.
We hope.
We hope.
How are we hoping? It's coming. They said it's coming.
They didn't say it was going to be 3D like this.
No, it was not... whatever.
Not like this. Not like this. Anyways, like, it's gorgeous. And then it's a good entry level, but, like... 63 matches and I did exactly the same thing
yeah, yeah.
each time almost, and like there's certain things that are like insta wins, like certain features and stuff, and there's challenges, and I would go back and I would do the challenges. They weren't hard, like, and I don't know, I felt like it was mindless. And after I lost my first match and I was like, do I really want to go and try and figure this, and I was like, no. So I think that's it for me in Pokken Tournament DX.
I don't think it can compete with the likes of Injustice and Mortal Kombat, which
Injustice has a pretty freaking good story,
and is a fighting tuned fighter game too. Like mm-hmm. the fighting mechanic are very fine tuned. I mean, it's still a repetitive experience because it's a fighting game, but
yeah,
if you can't compete with Injustice and Mortal Kombat, good luck.
Exactly.
Good luck, honestly.
All right, well, I think that means I'm going to put Pokken Tournament DX to rest, and I'm downloading Cuphead. So, that's next. So, this is Thursday. We're recording this. Cuphead's already out. I'm sure I've been tweeting about it. Go look at that. All right, it's time to get into the news. We're going to do that right after this break.
Your financial future shouldn't be as random as opening a loot box. So Meta Financial can help you reach the next level with a financial plan that works for you and the world thanks to our socially responsible investing options. With Someta Financial, your money is good everywhere. Find us at SometaFinancial.com.
All right, it's time for the news. Catherine, a trailer came out today. I really liked the trailer. What was it for?
Everybody likes that trailer. I mean, people at work emailed about how the trailer was nice. It is the trailer for Red Dead Redemption 2. It's really good. It doesn't, maybe I haven't played the first one, but I'm not sure that these guys are the same guys as the first game.
Oh, it's only a minute and a half. That's pretty quick. That's cool. So it's kind of like it's kind of a teaser trailer.
Well, the first one was a teaser trailer where you kind of just kind of like saw the setting and had music. This one, you get glimpse of the story, glimpse of the characters. It says it's the story of outlaw Arthur Morgan and the Vanderlyn gang as they rob, fight, and steal their way across the vast and rugged heart of America in order to survive. Coming spring 2018 to PlayStation 4 and Xbox One systems, not PC.
No? It's
eventually going to come out on PC.
Yeah.
Red Dead 1 eventually did. But it took a while before it came on PC.
Yeah, I don't remember how long it took.
Long time.
Didn't GTA 5 do the same thing? They went to console first and then to PC?
Yeah. I think Rockstar like doesn't have a dedicated PC section or whatever. So, you know, they focus on the game release, regular, fix it and everything, and then eventually they release it.
So, yeah, that the character that you're following, he's not the one from Red Dead Redemption.
No.
OG. And I say that loosely because there was another Red Dead and all this kind of stuff. Anyways, John Martson was the gentleman that we were playing in the first game. Mm-hmm. So this is a new guy. But they say that this is like supposed to be like a prequel. So I'm curious to know how this rolls into how or what happens in Red Dead Redemption, the first one with John. Really intrigued. Got to see a little bit of the different characters that you're going to play with, and they look badass. I love Westerns.
It's got that Western feel down to a T, and they don't do it in a kitschy way or in an overly gritty way. It just looks... Because the world, you're in Montana, like in that area, so the world looks rich and colorful, and it's not just like desaturated gray and we're all cowboys here, but it looks alive and it looks action packed from what I can tell from that minute and a half. I think it's going to be one of those games that people talk a lot for a while.
The writing is pretty interesting too, and I think they've played close attention to detail to like the style of the time too. Like there's one line where he says he's talking about this kid's mom. And he's like, I'm going to keep her wearing black. Something along the lines of that. Keep you wearing black based on for you as well because of the death of his dad or something like that. So he's threatening some character. But like the way that they say it, and obviously I'm butchering it right now, it's super eloquent and super sounds like of the time and has that flavor. And I'm excited to hear more of that style of dialect.
It's something along the line of, while your mama's wearing black mourning your daddy, I'll keep her in black on account of you. So he's
there
basically threatening the kid.
Yes. So interesting to see why he's threatening the kid. And then they talk about money, and you know, you see a bunch of the other characters that looks like he's roping in to do some kind of heist or something like that. So yeah, Looks really awesome. I can't wait for that game.
It's gonna be a beast. I mean, even people that don't want to play it, I think a lot of people will be watching Let's Plays and stream just because it's got that flavor and that look and feel. A bit like Persona 5 or like those really long, intricate RPGs. If people don't want to play it, I'm pretty sure everybody's going to kind of watch it somehow.
Well, the pacing, I didn't find Red Dead Redemption too bad, but the pacing was solid until you hit Mexico. It seemed like Mexico kind of sucked the life out of it. Yeah, I mean, if they managed to keep up the pacing, I mean, we didn't. Yes, there's lots of replay value in like Grand Theft Auto 5 and all that kind of stuff, but not once did someone say like, oh, the story went on too long. I haven't heard that at all. So hopefully they've learned from that too. It's going to be exciting. And 2018 is, though it looks far away, it's really not that far away. And I think it might be good to have that around a time like a March or an April where there's nothing else to play or nothing, yeah. No other big releases, because you kind of need to like wipe your schedule of like what happened with Zelda.
I think timing is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely good timing because there's going to be a lot of releases in fall and even early winter. Because when you think about it, there's Far Cry 5 coming in February.
That's true. I forgot about Far Cry 5.
Yeah, and
I'm looking forward to that.
It's in, and the setting is in the same area as Red Dead Redemption 2.
Except few generations later.
Honestly,
it's modern day.
Westerns, well, that style are going to be hot in the next couple years, I feel, because you got, you know, Westworld being crazy in that kind of settings. I feel like it's going to be the new zombie thing. It's going to be cowboys coming back.
Yep. I am A-okay with you that.
Next Assassin's Creed confirmed to be in Western settings.
Oh my god, imagine a Wild Wild West Assassin's Creed. How would they dress?
Right?
How would they do the hood?
I mean, it's probably going to be a hat with like things on the sides or something. I don't know. UB's like design team is fantastic. They'll figure a way to make it work for sure.
I think we got all pretty close to that with Assassin's Creed 3, which was a few years before the cowboy era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it wasn't.
But
like,
he was.
You're not gonna see quite of that. He was native.
He was a native. Yeah,
he
exactly.
He was older. It was like. It was George Washington times. So yeah. Cowboys come a little bit later than that, right?
He's definitely going to be a cowboy.
Yeah.
But yeah, they could make it work. I know they could. At the very least, it would make it interesting if they do it in they do the comic books.
Oh, yeah.
With the Russian guy. So.
Oh. Right. Oh, my God.
And,
that's the other one they have to do.
They have one in the present day with Charlotte de la Cruz, so... I don't know. They could do cowboys for that, or a game.
We should do a show topic one day of like everybody come with a different pitch of a different Assassin's Creed game,
and then we talk
in
about
a different
it.
Venue, and we talk about it, and then how they would be attired and how it would work. That would be so much fun.
Yeah.
And like the sky's the limit. It could be ancient past. It could be the future, because mm-hmm. we haven't seen a future Assassin's Creed.
I don't know.
You can't, right?
When you kind of see when you're outside of the Animus, it's kind of like present day, but 20 years, 30 years in the future, mm-hmm. maybe?
Mm.
Or an alternate reality, but yeah.
Yeah, but like an actual futuristic Assassin's Creed, like where you're in the future. I mean, it could definitely work.
Assassin's Creed, Modern Warfare. Oh, wait, no.
and then in 10 years, they'll go back to Assassin's Creed 1, like, but they'll stylize it, and then it's going to be like back to roots or whatever.
And then it's going to be Altair.
Then it's going to be Assassin's Creed 1, 2, but the, like it's going to be 1 with a 2, and then as I'm
okay,
seeing
we're doing seeing that.
It.
It's going to happen. Everybody's going to have to pitch a different Assassin's Creed game at a different time. We're doing that. We're making that happen. All right. Simon.
Yeah.
What's going on with you, my friend?
Hey, speaking of Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
I have some kind of Assassin's Creed news that I saw today. And honestly, when I saw this, I was like kind of blown away by just like the idea of it happening pretty much in Assassin's Creed Origin. There's going to be an update coming, I think it's going to be October 27th. It's going to be called Discovery Tour by Assassin's Creed Ancient Egypt. And basically what it is it's going to be an add-on, or I'm not sure if it's going to be a game mode for Assassin's Creed set in the Origins universe, which is going to be like ancient Egypt. There's no combat. There's no quests. There's no nothing. All you're doing is exploring ancient Egypt. And like it's almost like a museum tour. So you're going around exploring things about, you know, ancient Egypt, how they, you know, the picture is talking about the mummification process. You're gonna have actual historian talking to you about their own expertise and the Grand Pyramids, life of Cleopatra, that kind of stuff. And honestly, that is fran fucking tastic. Like how smart is that? To just, you know, because ancient Egypt is one of my favorite time, because I love, you know, the ancient gods, that kind of stuff. So I was really excited to see when that's going to happen. And I was reading a bit online, and like people are usually saying, for all the shit we give the Assassin's Creed games, whatever the game, you know, comes out, the environment and the settings is always fantastic. Like people were saying when they made Notre Dame, I think it was in Assassin's Creed 3? No, 2?
Unity,
yeah, and Unity, like they were saying, it's actually a scaled version of Notre Dame, and it's like perfect, and it's fantastic to go through. And so, I mean, knowing the level of details that UB goes into creating the environments, I'm really excited to see what that section is going to be like, and how that's going to be just walking around and learning about Egypt while playing quote unquote a game. So,
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I think with Assassin's Creed, sometimes the lore and the history of it kind of like gets lost in the Animus database. Yeah. But like, it's funny you talk about Unity. I played Unity and it was the same year or not too long after I had visited Paris, and I was actually orienting myself in game according to what I knew about the city, because we were on Dauphin Street, which is close to Pont Neuf, which is like a walking distance from Notre Dame. So using Notre Dame and using just the building I stayed in was in the game.
That's creepy.
Because that city is...
Yeah, well, they pretty much did it.
So for me, I was like, maybe I should just walk around and explore and see what's there, what I saw that's still there, that's in the game. So having the mode where you can just tour Origins, the world of Origins, and learn about ancient Egypt and everything, that's going to like satisfy the history nerd in me. And it reminds me so much when I was growing up, I had a CD-ROM. We're talking in the 90s here. I had a CD-ROM and it had three areas. It was ancient Greek, ancient Egypt, and it starts with a P. It's the volcano that destroyed the city.
Pompeii,
there we go. My god, I'm so sleepy. It had Pompeii, and my favorite part was ancient Egypt, and it was basically it was like almost like at the time it was like mind-blowing. It was almost like a point-and-click game. You kind of like clicked on images and learn about things, and they would have videos and talk to you, and it was, back then it was the shit. So when they announced that mode, I was like, that's like the perfect evolution of all these educational CD-ROMs I used to love. So
I'm really hoping they're gonna have like scale models. Like, I haven't been to Egypt, so I'm hoping they have like kind of like scale model versions of what they look like now, and then have like these crazy animations of like almost like going back through time and reassembling of like how they think they looked day. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, it'd be so cool. Because, you know, I went and visited the Mayan ruins when I was in Peru back in 2004. And, like, they tell us the tales, and they say, like, you can tell which buildings are really important based on, like, how nice the construction of the rocks. Because everything, they made, like, almost like bricks out of the rock. And most of the buildings were actually covered in gold because they worshipped the sun. But all the gold is gone because when the Spanish came in, they ripped it out.
They took everything.
So what a cool idea. But imagine if you could go like see that and then go back, but they like reassemble it with the gold, so you get the idea of what it could look like. Like, that's the concept of it. Like, it blows my mind because it's a place you've already been. But like, if you can't travel there, this is the next best thing, right?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. Exactly. Like, I'm not a big fan of traveling, but I kind of want to see it. So I don't know. It's going to be cool to see. Gonna be cool to see what's happening.
I've got little piece of news. It's very Canadian focused. Ooh. So today, so Thursday, the 28th of September, the Minister of Canadian Heritage, Melanie Joly, announced the launch of Creative Canada. So you're probably asking, well, okay, well, one, what the heck is that? And two, what does it mean for gamers? So the first thing, the big news that everybody's talking about is the fact that Netflix is supposed to be producing content and has dedicated content based around Canada.
Oh, that's cool.
That's what everybody was talking about. And that was the lead that got me to go in there. Mm-hmm. But I was like, huh, what else does this stand for? So I read through her whole spiel. I didn't get to watch the video, but I read through the whole presentation. And essentially, she starts talking out and giving some context about the culture and arts sector of Canada. And it's pretty interesting that this area of work, there's actually like 630,000 Canadians that have jobs in it. It's wow. A $54.6 billion industry in this country. And she mentions like different industry, film, whatever. But then she talks about video games. She said, and there are thousands more working in the field, like 20,000 Canadians designing and composing for video games. I didn't realize we were at 20,000 people in this country making games.
Wow.
That's nuts. Yeah.
It is between the freelancers, the independent studios, the major studios. It's crazy.
Huge industry.
Do we know like how many of that is in Montreal?
No idea. I think it was just like a spiel because she was actually talking about like what people are doing now. And like a lot of the protections and things and the pushes that they have behind creating arts and culture in this country were, you know, heritage ideas brought in. So they protected television, they protected radio, they protected music. But like, obviously, we live in the internet age. Video games didn't exist then. And the shift for, you know, obviously, like the radios and the TVs and stuff has been a bit of a challenge. But then there's those mediums that have been born in this digital age, right? So the change just like brought expansion, new jobs, new markets. And one of her quotes are, "We are leading in gaming, post-production, and animation." That's something that Canada does. It's kind of awesome.
Damn.
So Creative Canada is set. I'm going to straight up read from her thing because, I mean, she writes it the best, right? Mm-hmm. Creative Canada sets the policy direction for our programs, legislation, and portfolio agency for the coming years. And it includes new initiatives and new funding to get us there. Funding. That's awesome.
Funding.
So, in our vision, Canada is a world leader in the quality of its creative industries, with creators empowered to make great content that stands out at home and around the world. And that Canada is pioneering in ensuring there is space online for diversity of voices at home and abroad, including Canadian content in English and French, multicultural and Indigenous expression. This is our vision. It is ambitious. It should be. Creative Canada will focus our efforts on three things. It will invest in our creators and their stories. We will promote the discovery and distribution of Canadian content at home and abroad, and we will strengthen public broadcasting and support local news. Okay, well, support local news, all that stuff. That's more television side. But the big thing that they said they were going to do, and this is something that Canadian developers use a lot, especially independent game developers. Actually, I'm pretty sure there's like no video game company right now that's independent that doesn't have this marking on part of their info on their website and their mm-hmm. game. Mm-hmm. Increase funding to the Canadian Media Fund. Hmm. How many like independent games have you seen, Kat and Simon, that like come from Canada that do not have the Canadian Media Fund tied into it?
They pretty much all have it.
Has them. Yeah.
And they, I think a lot of them use them to launch projects before going to Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Mages did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mages started with the media fund, and then when they were like, we could do more, but we would need more money, they did the Kickstarter, which was good for them, successful, and they were able to do more. Mm-hmm. So that's good. That's great. The Canadian Media Fund helps a lot of smaller projects get the kind of funding they need to become, you know, full-on projects. I haven't seen Canadian Media Fund project that's been like a complete and utter dud. Like, there's a lot of people apply, so they cherry pick.
Yeah. But now maybe there's more chances, right? And for different things. So it looks like they're really like opening it up. And I think that's really cool. We'll see how it pans out. And yeah, but like some of the, yeah, some of the, go and read the press release. It's her script from when she did the press release, Melanie Jolie.
It's her speech.
It's her speech. Yeah, straight up, it's her speech. So that's why when I read it, it sounded like a speech. But yeah, some pretty cool information. I mean, not a lot in the like video game directed, but I pulled out the key points, and I think it says some cool stuff about the Canadian government right now. Is, you know, they see 20,000 Canadians making games is a pretty good number, and nice. We're doing something cool.
Clearly, it's working. So why not?
Yeah. Well, what I'm really happy to hear, other than like let's help people make games, is the fact that they're finally acknowledging that the media landscape is changing, how we consume media is changing, mm-hmm. and how some of the stuff was antiquated and needed to be adjusted according to what we were doing. And it's like, you know, you talk about Netflix. There's no Canadian content on Netflix. How do we get most of our Canadian content? Was through the CBC or Canadian Media Fund projects and things like that. So maybe it's time to put some of that funding, give it to Netflix, so then Netflix then mandates Canadian creators to make Netflix originals.
Modernize.
You know?
Yeah, the other thing that they talk about, and it's not something that we talk about because it hasn't really been too much in our news, is she mentions the fact that like broadband is obviously not everywhere in Canada, because we are a huge country with a fairly small population when you think about it. Yeah. But she talks about that the Liberal government is keen on net neutrality.
Good.
Good.
Yeah, so they're not going to add taxes and stuff on things.
I mean, you know. It's, we are a pretty quiet people, but don't fuck with their internet, because then shit's going to hit the fan if you do that.
It's already expensive as fuck up here.
Well, that's what, they said that, it's already expensive. Why are we going to tax it further? So, yeah.
We basically have a monopole, so, monopoly?
Monopoly.
Monopoly.
Yeah. Monopole is Francais.
Francais. I am Francais,
oui.
So.
There you go. Cool. With that being said, it's time to get into topic of the show. We've got a great interview for you with Christopher Madigan. He is the composer of Cuphead, the soundtrack of Cuphead. So, yeah, I received a wonderful package in the mail, 4 amazing vinyls, straight up on point with the aesthetic of this game. I'm so excited to play more. And, yeah, he gives some pretty cool insight on how it was all constructed and the recording process and all that jazz. So, yeah, and I say that punnily, because there is jazz influence in there. All right.
Wouldn't all that jazz.
I see.
All right.
Jazz hands.
Let's do this. Christopher Madigan, who happens to be the composer of a very, very popular game that has released, Cuphead. Super excited to have you on the show, Christopher. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
So we're recording this, and though you guys are getting an audio, we're having a video conversation, and Christopher was commenting on the fact, you guys have seen it before, I got a slew of guitars and basses sitting behind me. It's because we at Girls on Games really love music. So as soon as I got... on, when was it? I think it was Monday. I had this wonderful package show up at my desk, because I also work in a radio station, Christopher, here in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
I was delivered this. This is the Cuphead vinyls with all of your music on it.
You have yours before I have mine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It is gorgeous, I have to say.
It looks like it looks, yeah, very nice. I'm looking forward to, I think hopefully I'll get mine next week. But
As soon as I got it, I ran up to the rock radio station where we are shown, because it has a vinyl player.
Oh, lovely.
And started listening. And I've got to say, good God, this is awesome music.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations.
it was a long, it was a very long process. So I think we're happy with how it turned out in the end.
Great. So I want to roll back even before Cuphead. I want to get back into, you know, your beginnings as a musician and what got you to this point. So give us some background information on yourself and what brought you into composing music on your own.
Going back to the very beginning, I originally wanted to be a rock drummer.
Nice.
Which is, I think many kids' dreams, I assume, or some sort of rock musician. I loved my mom. I think we had two tapes in the car. We had Let's Dance and Billy Joel's Greatest Hits.
Nice.
And I wanted to be Liberty DeVito so bad, and he's Billy Joel's drummer. Or he was at the time. My mom played the piano. She's a very good piano player. And that was kind of the only music we had in the house. But she wanted me to take some sort of music lesson. So I did piano for a bit and I really didn't like it. And so she was cool. And she's like, what do you want to do? I said, well, I want to play drums. So she sort of compromised on that. So I started taking classical percussion with a member of the symphony I'm from Saskatchewan originally. So a member of the symphony there I started studying with. And I was with her for a couple of years, and but still played a lot of, I still wanted to be a rocker. So in high school, I played in some bands and stuff, and somehow ended up doing my undergraduate in more classical style percussion. And that's sort of from there. That's where it ended up going.
Awesome. Yeah. So your website right now says you're a member of the National Ballet of Canada Orchestra since 2010. So what is that involved? You're there but playing percussion and, you know, you practice with them, and then when they have shows, you play?
Yeah, we do all of the shows in Toronto. So we're in season about 4 months out of the year. The company itself is kind of runs year round. The orchestra is there. So we're there in November and December, a lot of Nutcrackers. And then March and June. And so that's when I'm there. And then in my other time, I do as much other freelancing as I can throughout the city, doing a lot of orchestral stuff. I still try to play as much jazz as I can, but that's kind of a totally different scene. So I do a little bit of that if I can. And composing was a very recent sort of development.
So let's talk about that. So I was listening to some of the other tracks that you have, part of your portfolio on your website, and they seem more experimental in some cases, less so than melodic that you get out of the Cuphead soundtrack and the jazz style. I guess that is your jazz influence coming into play there, I guess.
Yeah, the stuff that's on my SoundCloud is going to be pretty weird kind of stuff. I did I was in a pretty cool band about 12 years ago in Saskatchewan, and I kind of wrote a couple things for that, which are not really available for the public to hear. But that was kind of like, I wanted to write, but you got to have the right outlet, I think, in a lot of cases. And then, so I did a year, tried to go back and do my master's in jazz. And it was just, I ended up stopping because I'm much too busy sort of freelancing to do much. But so one of the tunes that's up there is a tune I wrote and did on one of my recitals there. And then the other, that sort of, there's a bunch of weird ambient stuff on there, which was, we did this interesting project 4 years ago for Nuit Blanche here, which is the all-night art sort of festival they have once a year. And so I ended up, all of us who were on the project ended up writing a bit of sort of background music for that. So, but that was kind of the extent of my writing. So that's why when Chad and Jared asked me, I remember it this way, they might remember it differently. It's quite possible that this is making some of this up, but this is what I specifically remember is they had this little game that they wanted to make, because Cuphead was a lot smaller, 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you want to write some big bandy kind of tunes for that, because I was apparently the only musician that they knew, more or less, because we'd grown up together. I've been friends with them for over 25 years probably now. So they asked me, and I distinctly recall saying no, because that's much way outside of my comfort zone. And then I think I said no a couple of times, but still somehow ended up never actually, I don't think, saying yes, but somehow ended up trying to write these tunes for this thing they were doing, and it ended up kind of snowballing a bit from there.
So how did the research go for you? Did you already have a pretty good general idea of how you wanted this to sound as soon as you saw their artwork and their pitch, or did you really have to dive into the depths of listening and things?
A bit of both. I mean, I've been a fan of this music for a long time anyways. This wasn't sort of like a new thing that I was hearing. But, you know, Chad had a specific idea. Like, he had sort of done a bit of his own research beforehand and sort of gave me, you know, sent me a few YouTube videos of stuff from that era, some Cab Calloway and some Ellington stuff. And he said, like, this is the vibe that we should go for. A lot of those old cartoons actually don't really have much of the jazz kind of vibe. They have a bit more of like a, you know, cartoony chamber orchestra kind of thing. I don't really know how to describe it, but a lot of them don't really use jazz in this manner. So, but Chad from the very outset was very much like, it needs to sort of sound, it needs to be really exciting big band music for these bosses. And so the research was just, you know, I listened to thousands and thousands of tunes, you know, delving much deeper into the music than I had ever had, obviously in the past. And just listening to it and trying to sort of figure out what, you know, what some of the stylistic conventions might be. And trying to be as authentic as possible to that era, but still sort of keep a, you know, a unique voice maybe. And And then also finding a great teacher. I sort of looked around for a while to find somebody to sort of, you know, coach me in a sense and say, like, I bring my charts to him and he would be like, this is terrible or this is not going to work. And so a lot of it, you know, I kind of shopped around for a bit to try and find somebody who would sort of get on board with the project. And I was very lucky that somebody recommended John Herberman to me, who's a guy, ended up sort of became my guru on this project. And he did, if you see the videos from the sessions, he's the guy conducting.
Oh, wow.
And he got really on board. He was like, this is a really cool project. So he was, I just ended up studying with him for a couple of years. And, you know, that's what he does, is he's a freelance composer and arranger. So he knows that stuff inside and out. So he was really able to sort of help me get my head around where to start and where to take things.
Did the concept of doing like video game music and planning for like that loop structure, because obviously you have to think about, you don't know how long someone's going to play a level before they actually hit the end when you can like finish it off. Like when we play music, it's like, it makes sense. You know exactly the duration of a piece. This you don't. So did that change how you were writing things?
I was conscious of it earlier on, and there's a couple of the earlier tunes actually have more odd forms for big band music, because they kind of was like, I kind of like had, would have a section at the end where we could say, okay, we'll repeat this section. And then after a while, we sort of abandoned that idea and said, like, you know, we're just going to make the tunes as they are, and we'll figure out how to repeat them. We'll figure out how to elongate them dynamically when they're done, which we've successfully sort of done that. And another thing that I wanted to do was make, most video game soundtracks, the tunes, they start, and then they'd run through the tune for a bit, and then they sort of fade out. And I really wanted to, I was like, if we're going to go this far on this, we might as well go all out and, you know, make the songs complete as they are. So every tune has an ending. There's not a single tune on the soundtrack on the soundtrack that you would buy anyways. Nothing fades out. They all have an ending. You're not going to hear most of them in the game, but we were like, if someone is going to purchase this or is that into the music, they're going to want to hear totally complete tunes. So we were sort of conscious of it from that way, but we were able to make, I wasn't conscious of it while I was writing it, but after every tune was done, I'd go back to it and say, like, how is this going to work inside of the context of the game? And we made it work. It's fine. It's great.
Did you find that was easier when composing, to think about it to go back and rejig after you already had the piece rather than going through and being like, okay, I need to make a loop first?
It's kind of harder to go back once you have something stuck in, you know, you have like a firm idea of how it should be.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to go back and like say like, okay, we got to like change this now a bit. So, but fortunately there wasn't that much of that going on. And kind of what I ended up doing was once everything was mastered, I like put each tune into Cubase and then went in and found the exact, you know, couple hundredths of a second where it needs to cut back to earlier in the tune so that there's a seamless loop without any sort of the click sounds that you might hear. Like we had to make sure that it was sort of on the right point of the wavelength. And so like the math was actually took a little while to sort of figure that out. But in the context of the game, once the tune goes as far as it can go, then it should seamlessly loop back to earlier in the tune. And in theory, you won't notice it.
Did you find that harder because, like, I was watching the recordings and you've got live off the floor and orchestra playing, big band playing, and, mm-hmm. you know, I would imagine because you're recording that way, if you've got, yes, you've got the microphone next to one instrument, but you're still picking up stuff from other instruments too,
yeah.
that would make it hard to do that kind of process to edit the music, to make it loop?
Yeah, and there was a couple times where in my mind, I was like, this is where we're going to loop it. And then when we got to that stage of like looking at the live recordings, like, because it's real musicians and, you know, some things, it's not a MIDI track, so it doesn't always end exactly where it needs to end. And so sometimes I'd put in I'd say like, it's got to loop from here back to here, and it wouldn't work because something would be bleeding over or it would cut off. So, you know, you sort of have to like then work around that and slide it over just a hair to make sure either way. But I mean, it's fortunately that with the technology that exists, you can do that pretty seamlessly. So, and there's definitely some, I think we can talk about this, or I guess the game's technically out now.
It will be out when this
yeah.
comes.
what we did was, which is, I think, interesting, to keep sort of a certain amount of variety in the music. Mm-hmm. So if you want, you know, if you listen to like a jazz tune or a big band tune, like there's gonna be, you have the opening and you might have some ensemble sections and then someone will stand up and take a solo, mm-hmm. you know, and solo over rhythm section, and then there'll be like another ensemble section and then another solo maybe, and then the end of the tune. Like that's just a very common sort of thing. And basically what we did was we didn't record any solos off the floor like that. We kept the band played and all of those sections, the rhythm section just sort of played and the background played, but no one was soloing over top of that. And then after those were done, we brought in, I think half a dozen musicians over 2 days and got them to solo multiple times over these sections. So what we can do now is when you start a boss, you might hear, you know, you'll hear, it'll be the same tune, but you might hear a trombone solo and then a vibraphone solo. But then if you start it again, we can play a different version of the same tune. So when you go through it, you'll hear like a trumpet solo and then a piano solo or something. So, you know, we really wanted to keep it. I think there's a lot of music in the actual game. The guy who was doing the mixing, I don't really know the final number. The guy who was doing the mixing, like some of those tunes have like 6 different versions.
Wow. So
if you're looking at a 3-hour soundtrack, a couple hours of that is the big band music. You know, there's probably at least 10 hours of tunes there, which are in the game. We chose a good variety of solos for the soundtrack. We sort of had to narrow it down. We couldn't do like 6 mixes of every tune.
Well, it has to be a lot because I've got 4 vinyls sitting in front of me.
There's a lot of music.
Yeah.
So we hoped going that extra mile and sort of having a certain amount of variety built into the songs that, you know, not everyone's necessarily going to notice that, but the people that do, I think, will appreciate that level of detail.
Totally. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the E3 2017 trailer. Did you work on that as well for the music?
Well, that music is in the game.
Okay, so that's straight up from the game. But what I find really interesting about that piece that's different from all the others is it's more atmospheric and reminds me more of your earlier, the stuff from, I don't know if it's earlier or not when you published it, but the stuff from your portfolio. And it feels more like you're creating an atmosphere than a melody. And I find that really intriguing.
You're talking the one from just this summer.
Yes, like exactly. Yeah, it's just a series of notes and a little bit of drums, and you're able to create the entire mood.
Well, that was kind of it was kind of my riff to a certain extent on 2001, this also Sprach Zarathustra.
Yeah,
the Strauss tune. Yeah, like that was you know, just trying to emulate that kind of vibe. This really sort of thing that's gradually building and then kind of like breaks out, and where that happens, and you know, by the time you get to that point in the game, it works quite well.
Awesome. I'm excited to get there.
But that one is actually in the game. Not all of the old, the trailer from a couple of, like from 2015 is, you know, a version we did of a tune that existed, but that specific tune is not in the game, but a version of that tune is in the game. And then if you listen to the original first two trailers, that was music that I don't think I knew that they were going to be even releasing those, because it didn't sound that good. It was just MIDI music, right? So it's interesting to see how far it's come from these kind of like okay MIDI tunes, and I laid a bit of drums down on it, and then a small group tune, and then the full big band.
Did you always know it was going to be a live recording for the game?
I think we had tossed around the idea of MIDI for like a couple minutes, and you know, initially it was like going to be a budget thing too, like, you know, it was a much smaller game and they didn't want to spend thousands and thousands of dollars, or they weren't really able to spend that much money on hiring musicians. And I think you know, I was still writing, like the tunes were going to be the same, but they would just be MIDI versions of those tunes. And I think around the time when that E3 trailer dropped a couple of years ago and all the buzz came, that was sort of the point where they're like, okay, we really need to go real musicians all the way, you know, hire who needs to be hired. And which is, you know, very nice that they had that kind of faith in the project, but also, you know, they sort of like stuck with me for all of my, there's a lot of weird stuff on there that we sort of added, and like, I guess at this point it's not really giving too much away, but you know, I wanted some barbershop tunes on there. Mm-hmm. I had to hire a barbershop. I wanted the tap dancer and a singer, and they were, and you know, never once were they like, well, this is going to cost. They were kind of always like, okay, we trust, you know, this is, we understand where you're going with this, and it'll make it better.
Well, we constantly have this debate, video games art. I mean, us at GOG, we consider video games art, but this is like one of the first games where it really feels that attention to detail because of all the history that's being pulled into it. Like, it's kind of weird in the fact that like we're in this crazy new technology, all these things we can do, yet we're going back to hand-drawn animation style, hand inking, live band performances, like stuff that we could have never done before because technology couldn't let us do it. And now we're purposely trying to make something look vintage in all aspects.
Well, and that was another thing that happened early on with them. Like, they had tried some different styles, and I think as a joke, Chad and Jared had kind of, you know, they did a couple hand-drawn things in that style, and the response from all the friends was like, yeah, that's what you have to do. And you know, I think they were kind of like, oh god, that's gonna be a lot of work. But I think people know that it's so labor intensive, and I think it would scare a lot more sane people off maybe, but we were all like, everyone was so gung-ho on this project to just put, you know, really go for the kitchen sink and put it all in. So, and yeah, the attention to detail is what, like, as I'm playing through the game, is stuff that I, you know, haven't really seen before, and I've seen like a still picture of it, but playing the level, and it's just like, it's kind of mind-blowing what they have assembled.
So yeah, I'm downloading now. This is the Thursday night before this launches on the Monday, so it comes out tomorrow. So I'm currently downloading, and I'm one of those people too that I like when I first get something teased and I'm really excited about it, I'll borderline go on blackout.
Yeah,
which is really hard for what we do. So like there's certain games that I purposely try to stay away from a lot of the news, and this was one of them because this one intrigued everything that video games, art, animation, everything that I love about, you know, the medium that we're in. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a chance to play through, so I was curious to know, were you involved in like the foley and sound effects and things like that that had to be involved? And if so, like, is that related to the music then? Does that have to like integrate in the same kind of thing? Because I imagine like a technology-esque sound wouldn't fit against the soundtrack that you've created.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have really much to do at all with, well, I basically nothing to do with the sound effects. That was a group, I think they're based in England, called Sweet Justice.
Okay.
And I think they just had it's my understanding anyways, they have a fantastic collection of, you know, vintage sound effects. Not necessarily live, you know, they have like recordings of, you know, legitimate sort of things. So that's a lot of what ended up getting used actually, was very authentic sounds. And also like hearing it, you don't like, it all blends so well together. I was quite surprised playing it. Putting the headphones on and like when it's all balanced, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of what you get watching the playthroughs on TV, like it's the recording is never, the recording is kind of always a little off, it seems. And playing it live yourself, like it's really nicely balanced, and like the sound effects all sound great, but nothing sticks out. So they've done like it seems like it fits. So
sounds excellent.
That's what I can attest to on that. But.
So if you had your time back, would you do it all again?
I think so. I don't. I'm curious if if we knew 4 or 5 or 6 years ago how much work this was going to be, it might have been a lot scarier of a prospect at the time. But I think because it escalated gradually, and then, you know, 2 years ago when it got so much popular buzz, it kind of energized everyone to really like be. Everyone was already enthused about it, but it was kind of like this push. So, I mean, I'm happy to have, I came across a funny Dorothy Parker quote, and she was like a mid-20th century American poet. And she basically said, I hate writing, but I love having written. And that's, to a certain extent, that was like, the process was so demanding, and it was a lot of research, and it was a lot of trial and error and sketching things and throwing it out. And it was it was quite stressful until it was sort of on close to being done. And like, I'm so happy I'm very happy with how the soundtrack turned out, but it was never particularly an easy process. So
doesn't sound like it, but geez, the struggle with the payoff at the end must feel good.
it feels great. It feels nice. And I'm probably not going to sleep particularly well tonight, I assume. It's a little Christmassy in a sense.
Yeah.
Like I'm excited for people to you know, there's a lot of excitement about this game. I'm excited for people to finally just get to experience it.
Yeah. Well, the game has been accessible for streamers since yesterday. I think reviews drop tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then this goes live on Monday. And I'll have a few good hours in, I'm sure, and be super excited.
I'm sure you will like it. I hope that you do, but I think everyone's going to be. There's a lot that no one has seen, you know.
That's exciting.
People have only seen small portions of the first couple worlds, and not even complete worlds. When it's all right there, it's just a really nice. Everything is so great.
So what's next for you?
I don't know. I go back to freelancing, and I don't really have any writing projects on the horizon. There's been no talk of Cuphead 2. I know like, if that happens, I do have some ideas. If that happens, and if they ask me again, I have some ideas stored away that I would that I would like to do, but nothing of this grand scope anywhere in the near future.
But I guess it's all back into the orchestra and things for holiday season and stuff like that.
Yeah. Ballet gets going again in November, and we have a couple very fun but challenging programs coming up. And so, you know, freelancing is like feast or famine. August was, I don't think I did a single thing in August, and I was kind of like, I was getting a lot of like my own work done, you know, and then getting lots of practicing, but kind of go stir crazy a certain amount.
Oh, for sure.
So
you need a project.
You need something to do, yeah. So unfortunately, I have a couple of fun things coming up in October, and then yeah, November and December will be super busy playing wise, and we'll see after that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, and I want everybody to have the chance to go follow you on your social media and check out your website and stuff. So this is a chance. Go for the plug.
My Twitter. I should actually look this up. I think it's Twitter/Chris Madigan. KrisMadigan.
I believe you are correct.
And I think it's also just chrismadigan.com.
I'm going to look too, just to check.
It might be easier just to Google Cuphead Composer. I don't know.
Well, I follow you now, so it should be really easy. Yeah, Chris Madigan. Awesome. And then, the chrismadigan.com. Mm-hmm. That's great. So, yeah, everybody, if you like the music of Cuphead, holler at Chris.
We hope that you like the music. We hope everyone loves the game. And we're just, I guess by the time this comes out, people will have played it. But
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And it's time to close out the show. Of course, before I let you go, I want to thank very much our website host partner, Fun.io. If you're looking for a smaller website hosting, like a WordPress blog or something like that, or something larger like VPS posting, go check them out. They have awesome services. So, Stream Team, Simon.
Yeah.
Busy.
Holy shites. Yeah, lots of new people coming in and joining the Stream Team. I guess it was a wave of people, like seven at once, almost at the same time. So we had it all started with Pixel Princess, who joined us, and we had Asika and Chikari, who joined us last week, and then this week we have three more people joining the stream team. We have Fijoli, Auntie Tinkerbell, and Butterfly.
Welcome, everybody.
Welcome. So, I mean, definitely a couple of them are already Discord partners, so that's pretty cool. And excited to see exactly what's going to happen with them. Again, girlsongames.tv, always someone streaming there. Pretty much now, almost officially, always someone streaming. So that's actually pretty fantastic. So check it out.
It's awesome. Catherine, what's happening on the website?
It's a podcast full week. Woo! Not only is there the new Oban episode.
Oh, it's a good one.
It's a good one. Oh, yeah. I went on another podcast called Putzenader.
Traitor.
It's it's by our friends from Les Jeux Sans Fait, Patrick and Grégory. They do a French podcast about the gaming industry. Putzenader is a casual conversation about the gaming industry. It's for a network called Radio Kawa, and basically they're in France and they were like, there's a lot of fun stuff happening in Montreal video game wise, can you guys bring it to us? So, and I was their first guest because they know that if they feed me, I'll show up, and then I can talk and talk and talk and talk and not stop talking until they tell me, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. If you speak French, if you understand French, I talk a lot about Girls on Games, what we do, and how the project changed over the past of 6 years. So it's on there.
I listened to it and it was very good. Go check it out.
Thank you. And Simon, what's the Oban episode about? I haven't listened to
Overwatch
yet.
League. Basically, well, we officially have a start date and all the teams announced. So we kind of go over all of what's gonna happen and what's happening for the for the Overwatch League. And it's I'll just give you like a little hint of what was discussed. Basically, the Overwatch League is supposed to be an international league featuring teams from all around the world. Basically, what that means is 9 American teams and 3 European teams. Well, one European team, 1 Asian team, and 1 Korean team. So it's pretty United States centric. So that's kind of disappointing. So that's one of the topics that we talk about during the full on show. So it's a good
Interesting.
One.
Interesting.
It's like the World Series of Major League Baseball.
Pretty much the World Series of baseball in the United States
and one Canadian team. Yay!
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You heard about the NHL teams going to play in China. So you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically, we talk a bit about the League of Legends Worlds as well, who are going on right now, so we talk a bit about that too.
Nice! I'm excited to go listen to that. I will save that for my commute tomorrow morning.
It's a long one, so you might want to split it into...
multiple commutes!
There we go!
A commute, a second commute, and a run. I think that'll work.
That should do it.
I listen to a lot of podcasts while I run.
That's fantastic.
So I want to thank Kat and Simon for being on the show with me today. Before I let them run away, I want them to share their social media handles with you. Go for it, Kat.
I'm CSDESBINS, CSDBIN, on Twitter, Instagram, most gaming platforms. Come check me out.
Simon, how about you? Hello.
I am GOG Simon on Twitter, and you can follow Of Buffs and Nerves at Of Buffs and Nerves on Twitter as well.
Nice. I am Leah Jewer on most social media platforms, but if you're looking for me on Mixer or Xbox Live, I am GOG Leah. But of course, you want to know about Girls on Games, and you can follow us on social media. Twitter and Facebook, we're at The Girls on Games. Instagram, we are Girls on Games, no the there. If you want to continue this conversation, you can go to Discord and chat it up with us. It's discord.me/girlsongames. But of course, if you need to know anything at all, you can track it down at our website. That is our home base. It is girlsongames.ca. So once again, thank you. It's been a lovely week. We're truly in fall now. All the games are coming out. There's way too many for the time, but that's okay. We will just stay up all night and play games. I am okay with that. Who needs to work?
I have not gotten a lot of sleep in the last couple days.
That's all you can do. The things we do for games. All right, guys. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk soon. Bye.
Later.